You're listening to WCNO, Palm City.
The following program was recorded at an earlier date.
Welcome to the Mindy Molina Show. I'm Mindy Molina, Investment Advisor Representative, Licensed Insurance Agent, and Fiduciary. This is a live show, and I'll be here to take your calls at 772-221-1100 with any of your financial concerns. Again, that's 772-221-1100. Well, hello, friends. Good afternoon. I hope you've had an awesome, blessed day. I am Mindy Molina. This is the Mindy Molina Show, and you are listening to WCNO Palm City, 89.9 FM, and we are so glad that you are tuned in. Today, we're going to be talking about this thing called the Key Man Policy. We're going to talk about what it is, what it does, different segments of it, and then buy-sell agreements. If you're a business owner, also, if you're married to a business owner, if you are the wife of a business owner or you have a partner in business, this show is so for you. So stick around with us. We're going to really cover a lot of information today on different types of insurance, different things that can happen, why it's important. And I have a really special guest here with me today, my good friend and awesome advisor, Frank Borelli, here with me. And then I have Mark Dombrowski, who is a longtime partner in the field of financial planning. I met Mark when I first started in the business and got to know him very well because we have a lot of similarities when it comes to our hobbies. And Mark Dombrowski is one of the best alligator hunters in the state of Florida, or certainly that I'm aware of. I think he knows more about alligator hunting than anyone. Do you know anyone that knows more about it, Mark, than you?
I'm not sure. Maybe some of the biologists.
So I know you were not expecting me to say, I have this special guest that's an expert in alligators. No, he's also an expert in life insurance and in financial planning for businesses when it comes to legacy planning, buy-sell agreements, all of these things. And that's how I know him, is from that. But he also took me lobstering down in the Keys. Had an absolute blast. He's very, very good at that. So an outdoorsman. So I'm in the room right now with these two men. Frank can assemble a helicopter and like fly it out to who knows where. And Mark can wrestle any alligator. I don't know if I feel safe or scared. But today we're going to dive into some of this information. So I hope you find value in all of it. And this is the Mindy Molina Show. You can find us on YouTube. You can find my firm, MindyMolina.com, M-I-N-D-I-E, Molina, M-O-L-I-N-A. And you can call in with questions. So if you're driving from work or on your way to a meeting, something like that, or at home listening, please call in if you have any questions, or you can even leave your number if you're shy and you don't want to be on the air. And Frank, what is the
772-221-1100? You can reach us. It's a live program, 772-221-1100.
So let's dive in. The Key Man Policy. So what is it exactly in very like layman terms, Mark? Like what is a policy that they call the Key Man Policy?
Well, I think, Mindy, I think what we have to start, and we have to think about a business, what is the key man of the business?
Yes.
So when we think about a business, let's say, for an example, if you own the business, you're the owner of the business, you have a staff, and you may have clerical staff, you may have a lot of people, but in that business, you have people in your business, and most businesses do, that cannot run without a certain person. In your situation, possibly Frank.
Mm-hmm.
You can't run the business without a certain person. That's key man. That's a key man to you. In some situations, family-owned businesses, it may be their children. Maybe their son may be taking over the business one day, and we want to make sure that we're protecting that. Now, what happens to the business? What happens to the business if something happens to that key person? You know, in certain situations, the business may fold. So we have to think about how can we protect the business. And Key Man Insurance does exactly that. It's not for the individual, and it's not a state plan or anything else. It's an insurance policy that protects the business. So if somebody dies in that business, that key person dies, well, we have to replace them. There's a huge cost. I mean, a lot of times, especially if it's a family member, we may not be able to get somebody else at the cost that we're paying that family member, or it's hard to replace one person's knowledge with one person.
I'm looking here at this one statistic, and 4 in 5 business owners, small business owners, this is from the small business survey, 4 in 5 small business owners say that there is an 88% chance that, yes, if someone, that there's one particular person in their business that if they left, it would affect them financially or, and like you said, fold, right? Yeah. There's a lot of implications that we think of it as a simple, maybe this person is a producer, maybe they are the expert contractor, maybe, can you think of some examples of who in some different businesses, like the example that you're just saying about the advisor that just passed away. Share that story.
So what happens is in this situation we just had recently where an insurance advisor had passed away. He owned his section of the firm. So he owned, you know, the firm. He was a key person in the firm. Now, the firm may not close down, but the firm is definitely going to be hindered by his loss. So they're going to have to replace him. So there's a cost to the company to replace him, both in the knowledge and what he does. So in some situations.
And the loyalty.
Absolutely.
You know, my clients are very loyal to me. If something happens to me, that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to connect with Frank. They may just say, oh, Mindy's gone, and then they leave our business.
Right.
And so having that could be a loss to the revenue of the firm, which ultimately is going to affect everybody else that's involved.
Yeah.
Right?
And I think the loyalty is very important because, you know, some people, maybe yourself, they work very long hours. You know, some people, they own the firm or they're the key person. The reason they're the key person is because they're working 12, 13, 14 hours. When you go to replace that person, you may actually need to replace two people or even three people to replace that one person. You could see that large cost that would come back to the firm if we had to put three people in the job that we just replaced with one. So there's a cost to the firm. What we're trying to do is we're trying to replace that cost with insurance.
Could even
on the
be
dollar.
Moving expenses to bring that next person in, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, all of that has to be considered. So when you think about a moving expense, you may find the person that you're going to replace lives in a different state, and you have to bring that person to the state. So there's all those costs as well. Good point.
Yeah, and right now we're talking about the loss to the business alone and how they're going to rebound if that key person is gone, and then what is the value depending on. And I know that a lot of people think sometimes it's just about a partnership, right? So if you have two people that are in business together, they insure one for the other. So if something happens to the other person, but then it kind of shuffles out and can be way more complex than that. But we also look at it as, like you said, employees, key employees. Maybe they have a gift of the perfect installation of certain things, or they have some sort of art or talent or gift of, like you said, an advisor. Having the loyalty, having the following, it's very easy to lose a really good employee and then have your revenue affected by that. But was there any other costs that would come that a business could be affected by when it comes to like losing a partner or an employee that I'm maybe not thinking of?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of cost in here. So when you think about one of the costs that you have to really deal with is the income to the business. So let's just think in the sales side. If you take your key salesman, there's a reason why he's the key salesperson. Either he has the contacts, he has the leads, he's a little bit smoother than everyone else. There's reasons for that. You take him out of the mix, you still have the same amount of people coming into your firm. Let's call it a car dealership. Car dealership has a key person, you know, and coming into that firm, that, you know, they're still coming into the firm. And the difference being is you're not closing the deal. So not only are you losing the income to the firm, but you still have all the fixed costs. So the car dealership or the firm that you're working with would still have, you know, large electric bills, phone bills, everything else, but less money coming in. And that's where you have that upside down approach.
That's
if you
how
don't
business
do
is
something.
Fold.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because exactly what you said. And it's huge. And then going into the other side of it, so let's say you do have a partnership, two people that own a business, and having a key man policy on the partner, the owner. So now we're looking at not only the loss of their value to the company, how their loss is going to affect productivity, how their loss is going to affect revenue, income coming in, how they're going to offset those costs that are still the costs for loans, costs for just keeping the business afloat. And let's face it, there can be a grievance time too. You know, the partner is probably going to be affected. So things slow down. But let's talk about the spouse. And just for example, let's say it's a man and his wife is at home, and now he has 50%, for example, share of the business. What happens to that share? It automatically goes to her.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know a part of this show we're going to talk about buy-sell agreements, so
yeah,
we really
right
want
in.
To cover that. That's important. But to go back to the key man, I think you're really hitting on something that's very important. The key man can be the business owner. And if you think about how many businesses, especially the local businesses here, how many mom and pop, in a sense, business are there? Both husband and wife work at the firm. They both share in different jobs. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they both might work the cash register, but there's a possibility that the husband may be going out and having relationships that he has, whereas the wife may bring relationships also that she has into the firm. So you take one of those out, the relationships are now severed.
Yeah, where he's the producer and she's running the books.
Absolutely.
It's usually the mix like that, but one doesn't do the other.
Yeah, no question about it. So if you think about if mom or the wife is running the books and something were to happen to her, he's going to have to hire a bookkeeper.
Right.
And the same thing for him. If he has a lot of the relationships and something happens to him, she's going to have to replace him. And you don't even know how you would do that. I mean, think about if she's the bookkeeper, trying to replace him would be extremely difficult.
In many cases, too, of course, with consultation with your CPA, these expenses to the business could be a business expense, the insurance?
Well, they absolutely are a business expense. They are a business expense. They should be handled as a business expense, much the same as when you look at health insurance. Health insurance can be handled by the business and paid for by the business. You know, these types of things, what this is basically doing, key man, is making sure that the business survives.
Right.
That's the key of this, is make sure that the business survives if you take one of the key people out of it.
How do you create value for that? So I have this theory based on my experience working with a lot of widows, and is that the grieving segment of a person's life. And I thoroughly believe that if you have your breadwinner who leaves you by death, you really need 2 years of income at a minimum to replace their income. Mm-hmm. And I know sometimes we just wing it when it comes to life insurance. Like, oh, give me a couple hundred thousand. Oh, I'll take a million. Like, we don't have an actual objective with the number. It's just give me what I can afford or whatever the insurance agent wants to sell you. But I like to see a strategy that says at least for a spouse to be able to grieve in place for 12 solid months. And to have income coming in, have zero financial distress, and for that to be covered so that they are not, because during that time, you're vulnerable. Your people are coming to your rescue. They want to help you, but you also can be vulnerable in making emotional choices that perhaps had you waited, you wouldn't have made.
Now, while we're talking about business insurance, key man insurance, you can call in. This is a live radio program. Feel free to call in with your stories or questions about anything you may have at 772-221-1100. 772-221-1100.
Thank you, Frank. So having that first year to just grieve in place, nothing changes. You don't have to sell your house. It doesn't matter to you that you just lost half your Social Security. You don't have to sell your car. You don't have to sell his car. You can just grieve in place. Nothing changes because mm-hmm. his income for that year has been provided to you through the insurance. Now, in the second year, you're going to start to get your strength back. You're going to start to get your mojo. You're going to start feeling like you're going to be okay and you're going to be ready to address these challenges financially, maybe you do decide you want to move. Maybe you decide you don't. Maybe you decide you're going to start going, move on a cruise and just travel the world for the rest of your life. Whatever you decide to do after that first year is probably going to be more logical and less emotional. And then now you have the power that the income is coming in. Now you have the time on your side. You have the ability to make sound decisions for the rest of your life if you just give yourself that two-year window. Because in that second year, that's when you're going to be ready to figure things out. So I think going back to the key man policy, it's like creating value of how much insurance should you have, right? What, yeah. And there's the value that's going to affect the business itself. And especially if you have a team and you aren't just going to close the business, you want all of that to keep going. How much time is necessary and how much revenue do we need to bring in? Do you have a time on a business that you think they need typically to get back on their feet and get back in their groove, to get their mojo back when they lose a key man?
Well, I don't know that there's a definitive answer, but most businesses know it. So it's not something that we would know sitting here talking back and forth with one another, but businesses know. If you took out your key person, whomever that may be, how is that going to affect you? How badly will that affect you? Is that going to affect you with 1x his income? So in 1 year, the business is back on its feet? Probably not. And the average, on when you're looking at key man, the average amount is 4x the key person's income. Mm-hmm. And the reason they do that is, Mindy, you're exactly correct. It takes a business 2 years to survive. That's number one. And when you think about the business trying to get back on their feet and getting up and going again, you have to, all the other costs that are incorporated. And we talked about if you had to go out and hire multiple people.
Right.
So
let me ask you this. With that value, so let's say a business takes out a key man policy for 4x the income of Mark. So Mark Dombrowski is insured as a key man in your firm, mm-hmm. for 4x your income. How much of that would go to your family?
Well, key man is very specific. So a key man insurance plan only goes to the business. It only protects the business. So I think that's important. But I know in today's segment, we're going to talk about, you know, buy-sell agreements. That's family. That's,
which is
that's
right
where
now.
Everything, yeah, we're going to move right into
move,
that.
Let's move right into
the buy-sell.
I think
that was the perfect segue.
Yeah,
yeah, so key man only protects the business. Buy-sell is where it protects everything else. So let's go there.
So what is a buy-sell agreement?
So,
well, let me go back to that scenario, because that might be a good way for you to explain it, the difference. Because in the scenario that I just said, let's include the wife. Let's just say one of the partners is insured for 4x, and then you're gone. Well, I guess I was using you as the example. So, Mark, you're insured for 4x your income by the business, and now you're no longer there, and your family, what ownership is the buy-sell agreement helps? Is it going to provide any income for them? Is the key man policy going to provide anything for them? How do we take care of the business and the family at the same time?
Good point. And sometimes you have to look at each business in and of itself. So is the business a family owned business? And in that regard, then yes, we'd have to take care of the family, obviously. If the business is not a family-owned business, then the key man protects the business and all the other owners and corporate, you know, entities of the business. That's where we have to go with that. As we get into the buy-sell, and let's talk about what a buy-sell is, because a buy-sell is so important. And when I think about a buy-sell agreement, I think of what business needs a buy-sell. And in back of my mind, I guess I've been in this business too long, but I'd say every one of them. And the ones that may not need it as much would be a sole proprietor. He may not need a buy-sell as much. And the same thing is when you had a husband and wife that owned the business. Obviously, we just got done talking about key man. It's so important for that. They may or may not need a written buy-sell. But a buy-sell agreement is a written document. So it's a written document, typically comes from an attorney. You can go down to your local office supply store, purchase the document itself, fill in the document, get it notarized, and it is legally binding. But most people and most businesses prefer to go to an attorney. So the attorney is going to write the document. The document itself is going to lay out everything that you need in that business, because when we think about the loss in a business, now we're talking about buy-sell, but when we're talking about that key person, that buy-sell person, there's three things that happen. Number one, he could die. And of course, that's why the insurance would come in. The other thing is, let's say, for an example, he becomes disabled. That's a very real thing, car accidents and things like that. He becomes disabled. And the
conflict?
Absolutely.
Can conflict be included? Like if you have two partners and they get into a fight, does the buy-sell agreement, can it include that? Or even if one of them gets divorced?
Well, we can certainly talk about what if one leaves. And I'm thinking sometimes in my mind, I think about retirement. But the reality is, if one of the partners leaves the firm, for whatever reason, mm-hmm. that partner leaves the firm, two things. Number one is the firm needs to protect itself. But there has to be some kind of an agreement. There's something, if you and I were business owners, Mindy, and we worked together for 25 years, and for whatever reason we disagreed and I left the firm, well, the firm still owes me something. So that's spelled out in the agreement.
So is it all based on equity? Like, what happens to your equity in the firm? And is there a valuation that you do to say, okay, because obviously if we're in business together for 20 years, how much, hopefully, that 20 years later, the firm is worth a lot more money, has a lot more value. So, and let's just go back to the whole idea of one of us passing away. If I were to pass away and we're business owners, what do my children get in my share of the business?
Well, we can talk about it from two different respects. The first respect we have to talk about is the other business partners. And when you think about this, you know, I love your children. They're great boys, but they're boys. They're young boys.
They're six and nine. Pretty sure they could do this, though.
But the reality is, you may think they can, but I don't want to be partners with them. So in that regard, if we were business partners and I say, okay, I can either have a written agreement that takes money from the firm and gives you your share of the firm. It pays out to your family a share of the firm, and then the firm, in turn, gets your shares of the business.
And that is a buy-sell agreement.
That's what a buy-sell does.
And how does the firm pay for my portion of the business? Through insurance? Life insurance?
Great question. When you think about the funding of the buy-sell, so the buy-sell agreement is a written piece of paper how you're going to transfer the business, in a sense. So that's what the buy-sell does, written by an attorney. Now you have the funding vehicle. Mm-hmm. How do we fund it? How do we get the money into this? I personally use life insurance because, as we talked about a little while ago, it's pennies on the dollar. So if we're going to do something today where we want a large sum, let's say, for an example, your share of the business is $5 to $10 million. Well, the business doesn't have $5 to $10 million just sitting in a bank account waiting for something to happen.
What would happen if they did not? So let's say you and I are partners and we don't have a buy-sell agreement and we don't have life insurance and we don't have enough liquidity for you to just give my boys what I deserve to give to them in my legacy.
Before you answer, thinking about your answer, we're on a live program today at WCNO. You can call in at 772-221-1100. Feel free to call in with your stories or questions at 772-221-1100.
Yeah, I'd love to hear a scenario. So if you have a scenario in your business or family and you're curious, give us a call. Give us a scenario and we'll give you some feedback on what would be possibly a good good structure for you.
Yeah.
What was the question again?
Yeah.
What was the question?
you were in the event that the person passed and there wasn't liquidity in the company and they didn't have the insurance in place?
Right.
I think that was the question.
Yes, you're right. So if something were to happen to me, how are you, as my business partner, going to give my children the equity in my half of the business?
That's a very scary situation for two things. Number one, if there's not a written agreement in place, you have to depend on me 10, 15, 20 years after your death to do the right thing for your family. This happened to me, and this is why I'm so concerned about this. Happened to me personally, my uncle. So my uncle passed away many years ago, and him and his partner were very, very wealthy businessmen. They had done a great job in their business. They were very wealthy. They had no agreement in place. They had nothing in place. When my uncle died, the business partner said to my wife, I'll pay his salary for the rest of your life. She thought, well, that's okay. That's not a bad deal. So that happened for the first year. the second year, he said, I can't do this and I can't pay this much because I don't have him to pick up the weight.
Key man was gone.
That's right. I don't have him available to help me out. They gave my aunt 50%. Now, this is only in the second year. In the third year, it went to 25%. And by the fourth year, my aunt got nothing for the rest of her life. And my uncle died when he was 45. My aunt is now 80.
How?
You can do the math yourself.
Wow.
Challenging.
So how is it that her husband's equity in the business wasn't just, I mean, isn't that what probate is for? Isn't that what the legal system is for, to protect her and make sure that she inherits half of the value? But wouldn't he be could he be forced? And I don't know. I'm really asking you this. Could he be forced to sell the business, or is there?
Well, you certainly, yeah. That's where you get the legal aspect is, you know, you can go to court, you can fight it out in court. But the challenge, and here's where the challenge comes into place. What the other business owner could have done is he could have just closed the business, changed the name of the business, and opened the business right back up again, him being 100% owner, leaving nothing to my aunt day one.
Wow.
He could have done that. And that happens every day. I mean, that happens in so many businesses. So the business owner either trying to do the right thing, he has to fold the business because he can't financially afford the partner. So, or he's going to do something shady. He's going to do something, that gray area, to protect himself and the business.
And let's face it, when you start doing all the work, there's always been this equilibrium of behavior in people. So you could take a really good person and put them in a position where they feel like things are unfair. And now all this, you know, because now this one person is left to do all the work and provide what two people should be doing. They can become a little reluctant, or what is the word, like where you're frustrated and they do wrong things. They kind of get put in a box where their attitude changes to, yes, you've been friends for 20, 30 years, but he's under so much stress at this point. He's doing things like this, like what happened to your uncle and your aunt.
Well, we could talk about this too, I think, from a partnership. Say there's three partners that own a business, right? And this is where the buy-sell agreement, if one of the partners, something happens, they want to leave the company, they die, etc. The other two, the three of them have made an agreement that they could buy or sell the interest for the partner in the company is what we're talking about.
Correct.
Yeah. Go ahead.
So here's how it works. You write on a piece of paper, or you have your attorney write on a piece of paper, the partners, and you lay out your shares of the corporation. So if the partnership could be Mindy and I own, you know, I own 40%, Mindy owns 40%, and Frank owns 20%. So you lay out the corporation, what they are. Then you also have to have a price. What is the value of this business today? Let's call it $1 million. Well, is our $1 million business today going to be worth $1 million in 5 years? Well, hopefully not. Hopefully it's going to be worth two or three or four.
Yes.
So we may have to go back and revisit the buy-sell agreement to make sure that it's current and it's up to speed.
So now keeping it updated, this isn't something that you just set and forget.
Right.
This is something that you want to keep updated.
Yeah. But very easy to do. We're just talking about an amendment coming back to do something like that. So now that's something you can do. And then the next segment is, you know, what do we do for the business owners? How do we fund it? Where's the funding going to come from?
Where is the money going to come from?
Where's the money come from? Now, the ways that you could put the money, think about how the money can put. You can have the business can carve out some dollars each and every year and put them in a separate account. Maybe you could put them into a money market account, maybe some kind of a safe account where you have them. But chances are the business is not going to put that much money aside because it needs the working capital.
Yes.
So you think about what we're going to do here. We can use insurance. And in an insurance policy, we can think about, you know, that insurance policy can do so many different things. We've talked a few times already today about the pennies on the dollar, the actual premium cost. The business can pay for that cost to be able to protect the owners of the business. But now think about this also. When you think about this buy-sell agreement, let's say for an example, we think about transfer and we think about, you know, leaving the business. You know, if you're 15 or 20 years younger than I am, chances are I'm going to retire 15 or 20 years before you do.
True.
So with that said, now I'm alive. There's nothing wrong with me, but I just want to retire. And I want what's rightfully owned by me from the business. So when I leave, I want what we know. But how would you be able to pay out my 40% of the business if you were only putting a few dollars aside each and every month. You probably couldn't. And that would jeopardize the business going forward. And if you had to move this large amount of cash over to me, again, what would it do to the business? It may put the business, quite frankly, out of business. Now, what you could do is you could use life insurance. And in life insurance, there's cash value life insurance. So you could buy a cash value life insurance policy. The business could pay for the cash value life insurance policy. That cash value builds up inside of the business or builds up inside of the policy. And when I go to retire, we'd be able to take out the money that is built up inside to pay my end of it. Now, with that, you could also do something. Let's say, for an example, you give me a portion of it. So that portion of it would come immediately, comes out of the life insurance. And the rest of it may pay me over a 5-year or 10-year period. But now it's a minute part of the business that you're paying back. And you're not struggling. So now you're not going through that.
So can you give an example of just a range? Because for people that haven't been doing research or gotten quotes on how much it would cost, but just a policy like that, today I did a quote, and it was, and I'm just going to give the range, it was around $1,200, male in his 40s, and it was going to produce, let's say, $550,000, but a IUL that was going to spin off income in retirement too. If, as long as he doesn't pass away, then later in life he'd be able to access those funds. Is that, can you give like a little bit of a range of what people could expect to spend? Because that's a lot. How could that, I know that, but kind of like a idea of what they would spend a month?
Yeah, again,
or what
Mark,
their business
Mark,
would have to spend.
Mark, as you're thinking about that cost, again, we're still live at WCNO here in Palm City. Feel free to call in with your questions or comments about business, Key Man Insurance,
buy-sell agreement.
Buy-sell agreement. Thank you. 772-221-1100. Feel free to call in, please, at 772-221-1100.
So I Mark, guess I'm, my question is cost. Yeah.
Cost. Well, if you think about pure cost, if we're just looking at a very basic cost, it could be just term insurance for a period of time, 10-year term insurance. It could be as low as $15, $20 a month, protect your business, you know, for the rest of your life. On the other hand, as we get into more complicated and sophisticated planning, now you're going to come up with a dollar amount. So let's say, for an example, as we talked about, you know, our business is valued at, let's call it $1 million. When we set up our business planning and we do that paperwork, if we agree that you're going to pay me $500, you know, when I leave, well, we can actually design an insurance policy.
You mean $500,000?
I'm sorry.
What kind of business are we running here, Mark?
$500,000. But the point is the actual business can decide if it's $500,000 and we can design it. So if I was going to retire, let's say, in 10 to 12 years, we could make sure that the insurance policy has $500,000 worth of cash in the insurance policy.
So let me ask you this question. Say we're partners and I'm in financial planning. So this is where I do the high level stuff. And then I bring people like you in. And that's how Mark and I know each other, is because he is my expert in the life insurance and buy sell agreement. All of this. He's my go to guy and helps me fine tune the stuff and help me do all the research and provide for me all the best policies that are out there in today's world, because they're ever life insurance changes. People don't realize that too. But my question is this: if I said this is what it takes for me to continue my cost of living, to maintain my lifestyle, I'm spending this much per year, and this is how much I'm going to need each year to retire. And let's say I'm retired for 30 years. I'm projecting a 30-year retirement. Can you design a life insurance policy that can provide that type of retirement? That as a business, we're investing in it. And then if neither one of us die and we retire, or you retire before me, but when I retire, can you back into that equation and build a policy around that?
Absolutely. So that's the crux of the planning that we would do. We would sit down, and because the thing that you would want in that policy is first that you'd want that policy to be able to pay out me as I retire first. But then ultimately, you may take on a partner. We talked about the key man. Now your key man is gone. You may hire a key man, and in doing so, you may give him some of the shares of the business. So you also want to make sure that when your turn comes to retire, the business also has cash available for you to retire. Wouldn't be fair for you if you took good care of me and then nobody took care of you. So you just have to make sure that the insurance policy can keep on going on and on and on, you know, forever to be able to take care of everyone.
So you're saying you could fund it for you. Mm-hmm. It could still be there for me, and it could be there for the next guy, and it's only this one policy that's been going on.
Absolutely.
Forever.
Absolutely. And I do want to tell you a little story, too. This is a real quick one. And this is a live case that we're working on right now. And a lot of people don't think about, you know, farmers and where what happens on a farm. And this happens every day in rural America. And this is where we're going to go. So the farmer, the dad, he's been a farmer all of his life. And one of his three children lives on the farm and works on the farm with him. Now, it's a very, very large farm. The net worth is around $10 million of the farm. Now, he's also got a daughter, and he's got another son. The daughter lives in New York. She's doing something in designing, and the son lives out in California as an artist or something. Neither one of them even wants to go back to the farm even for a visit, but they certainly want a part of that farm. So when the time comes, when dad passes, they want their share, which is fair. Every parent wants that share. So dad's in a crux. He's got one son that's working the farm and building the farm and bringing income for his family, and then he's got two other children that want nothing to do with the farm. What we did in this situation is we put insurance on dad. So we put a life insurance policy on dad. And what we were looking at, $10 million is what it was for the farm. Well, we want to make sure that the son that working on the farm, he gets the $10 million farm. So he's going to get $10 million. Well, what do we have to do for the daughter and the other son? We have to do the same thing. We did a $20 million policy for dad. The business is able to pay for the cost, because it is a business expense. When he passes away, when the father, the farmer, passes away, his daughter will get $10 million in cash, one of the sons will get $10 million, and the other son will get the farm.
So who's to say they get the life insurance policy? So I'm the daughter, and this is a case for me. I'm in Florida. My family farm is in Indiana. So if I get my cut, I might get my $10 million check, and my brother is running the farm, will I be able to say, well, I still am in, I, if there's not the right documentation, is that where the buy-sell agreement comes in?
Absolutely.
That's where the buy-sell agreement comes in, to make sure that I can't go back and still try to get my share.
That's correct. It's the actual written agreement that we talked about in the beginning of the segment, is there's a written agreement in place to say, this is what we're doing. Your share is valued at $10 million. You've agreed in this agreement, and as the father, the farmer, he's the one that said, my business is worth $10 million, and he's created a $30 million estate. Think of what he's really done here. You know, he's taken a $10 million farm and created a $30 million estate out of it.
Exactly.
So that's the power of what life insurance can do for the business owner. But most importantly for him, he wanted to make sure that his son that worked so hard to grow that farm and move forward with that farm is not going to lose everything that he put into it.
Absolutely. And what a great planning. And how easy is that? Because, you know, we see so much turmoil in family, especially at that point. It's like everybody can really start fighting of who is entitled to what. If you don't do the planning up front, you're leaving it to possibly a fallout with your children. And in this case, I'm sure that that's not going to be an issue at all. Everyone is going to be happy that this was all taken care of and that they were all treated fairly.
Right, and I've recently done some research where they were talking about that very thing. The term that we use, bought the farm, is actually based in life insurance products that were designed for farmers who, they when they died, they actually bought the farm. The life insurance bought the farm.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely
what we're talking about.
Absolutely. And you can imagine in this situation, this is real life. This actually happened. But the farmer said to me, and I've worked on the case, I've worked directly with the farmer and everything because it's a large case. And the farmer actually flew down. They're from Indiana. They flew down to Florida to meet with me. And when they flew down, his wife said to me, she said, you know, we've been going through this for 20 years. We've been trying to figure this out for 20 years. And we're not able to figure this out. So,
how did they feel about the cost of what they're spending to now go from a $10 million estate to a $30 million estate that's going to take care of all three kids and not just one? How did they feel about what they were going to have to spend in order to do that?
I don't think the cost, to be honest with you, ever came into play. We never discussed, you know, I think when you look at the cost, if you see the value of something, if you see something as valuable to you, you don't really worry as much with the cost. Now, for them, we had to make sure, it was one thing we had to do, is we had to make sure that the farm could cover the cost of the insurance policy. So that was one thing we did in the very beginning, is how much excess money is the farm bringing in, profits is the farm bringing in, that we could use a portion of that for the insurance policy.
And there could even be combination policies between permanent and temporary term products.
Correct.
So let's talk a little bit about different types of policies. So to keep everyone on the same page, because we are using a lot of different terms, not to use the word term, but we are using terms that might be a foreign language
as
to,
we're transitioning
to the listeners.
To the types of insurance, you're listening to the Mindy Molina Show. This is a live radio broadcast on WCNO. Please feel free to call in with your questions or stories at 772-221-1100, 772-221-1100. This is the Mindy Molina Show.
So let's talk about the different types of life insurance and ways that these different types of insurance can fund buy-sell agreement, save, help you buy the farm with the life insurance, and protect spouses, protect businesses. Is there one that is the one that you should have?
No. So there is no one type of life insurance that fits all, and that's why there's
no
so many different
bullets.
Yep, exactly. There's no magic bullet. There's so many different types of life insurance. There's actually five different types and used in so many combinations of. So we can break them down individually. The term insurance is exactly that. It's a temporary insurance policy for a period of time. Now, because it's a temporary policy, the insurance company knows that the risk of that policy paying a claim is very small. So the premium is very small. That's when you get into, when you hear somebody talking about, you know, they can get $12 a month and they can buy, you know, $200,000 worth of insurance. That's a term insurance, and it's usually a very short term,
so
5 or 10 years.
As we were having a call the other day about another case, weren't you, I had to hang up because I was going into a meeting, but didn't you spew out a status or a statistic about term insurance and how much it actually
does
not?
That was our phone call we were on with Mark. We were talking about how the industry average for payout for term insurance, Mark, you're probably more familiar than I am. It's very
2%.
Low. 2% of all the people that own and buy term life insurance. A very, very small percentage of those policies the insurance companies have to end up paying out.
So I would say that's because it's more of a catastrophic coverage. Like I have term insurance that's specifically designed that if something happened to me before I get my children raised, it's there for them. But once they're raised, I don't need it. But the odds are that's not going to happen.
Yeah, well, I mean, when you think about term insurance, there's so many different reasons for it. And it's a very, very valuable tool that we use in financial planning. I don't want to discount the importance of term insurance. For Mindy, for exactly what you said, you have two young children. You have a 6 and a 9-year-old. When you think about that, you have to have a very large amount of insurance to protect those boys' future if you're not here. You want to make sure that there's college planning in place and done. Well, when you start putting all those things together, you may not be able to afford a permanent insurance policy for the mass that you need. Term insurance, you can. So you can do a 15-year term insurance, which would take both the boys to college and pay for their college and everything else. That's important. The next segment, when you think about that, is, okay, now the boys are through college. You don't really have to put that much to them, but you still want to think about a legacy.
Yes.
You want to do a legacy. We want to leave something to our children. Most parents do.
But legacy is not really term insurance, right? Because we don't know how long I'm going to live.
That's right. That's exactly right. So now we're going to use what Frank referred to a little bit ago as permanent insurance. And there's two types of permanent insurance. There's universal life insurance, permanent insurance, and you can dial in. It's a very flexible product. So you can dial in the guarantee. You can dial in the premium. It allows you to do that, and it allows you to blend universal life with term insurance.
Flexibility.
That's right. Absolutely. It's got a lot of flexibility.
Like a hybrid.
Yeah. Yeah. And the next thing we have is the whole life. And whole life was designed for exactly what it sounds like. It's designed for your whole life. So you have that whole life insurance policy. Now you have whole life, you have universal life. Then you have a hybrid in there you have an index universal life that looks at the market indexes and gives you a little bit more. So if you want cash value growth, as we talked about before in our buy-sell agreement, you may want to use an index universal life. And lastly... I just had one more. Lastly, the last one is a variable universal life. Variable universal life does exactly what stocks and bonds do. Is it follows the market, it follows the stock or the bond. It can increase, and it can increase dramatically, but it can also decrease. So
how do you know which one to take, right? Or which one that you should go with, other than working with an advisor like me and sitting down and them coaching you and helping you figure out which one is. But so I guess I'm alluding to the whole life is the safest bet, and to know that you're not ever going to have any issues. How do you keep a life insurance policy from blowing up, as they say? Mm-hmm. What are some concerns that someone should have when they're trying to choose the right policy?
Well, while we're thinking about that question, you are listening to the Mindy Molina Show. We are dual licensed here, life insurance and investment advisors. Mindy and I are. I am Frank. Mindy and I are dual licensed in the insurance industry and financial advisors. You can reach us with your questions or comments or stories about insurance or other questions at 772-221-1100, 772-221-1100. Mark, what are your thoughts about her question?
Well, you keep cutting.
I know.
At least the question. Mindy, can you ask it again? I got to write it down, I promise, the next time.
Well, you know, before I go back to that question, I'm going to ask you, how do you describe your position? Because I know for some of the listeners are probably thinking, what does this guy do? Is he an advisor? So how would you describe what you do all day, mm-hmm. right? And if, yeah.
Well, in the insurance world, you have the advisor. Both you and Frank are advisors. You're licensed with the insurance companies. But what happens is that you're out and you're meeting with clients on an everyday basis, on a regular basis, and you don't have the time to really go back and do the research, that just get in the weeds and do the research and find out, as you just mentioned, how do you know which is the best one? Well, you have to find somebody on your team. You have to bring somebody into your team that all they do is the research. That's me.
Yes.
So I don't go out and I don't meet with clients. I don't sell. What I do is I sit down and I do the research. And when you come to me and you say, Mark, I'm working with this particular client, what is the best thing for that client? You can trust that I've already done all the research. And I think that alludes back to your question that we started with, is how do we know?
Yeah. Well, this leads back to my comment before. Is there anyone that knows more about life insurance than you?
Well, this is why we want to do a detailed, deep analysis dive with our customers, with our clients, we want all the details. We have to understand all of their needs in order to figure out what the best product or answer is to the question. That's like going to the doctor.
Yeah, we ask too many questions, but... there's a reason behind it, because when we're meeting with you and we're talking to you and we're really trying to develop the best strategy, we're not cookie cutter salesmen. We don't just have a few products or a few companies to pitch. We don't do that. We're problem solvers. We're independent. When we look at a company, I mean, how many life insurance different companies do you research on a daily basis?
I personally work with about 50 different insurance companies, and we work with every one of the brand name companies, the Prudentials, John Hancock's, AIG, everybody knows those companies. We work with all of them.
I bring you a client and I bring you a case and I say, this is what's going on. This is their whole story. Is there one company that you prefer over another?
No. There's not a company that I necessarily prefer, but there are certain situations. Let's say, for an example, if a client is a pilot and they're a private pilot, and we have a lot of those in Florida, mm-hmm. private pilots. Well, most insurance companies, that's a decline. They won't accept a private pilot. But we have insurance companies that will accept a private pilot at a standard risk. So there's no additional, you know, cost.
So you don't work for any specific insurance company?
No.
No. That's what makes... us independent.
Brokers,
I use that
right?
word a lot yeah. because we want to make sure that when we go to someone like Mark and we're looking for him to do the research, we don't want him just pitching us one, selling us a product rather than giving us a solution. We want the mm-hmm. best possible solution for our clients. And that's why we trust him, because he is independent. He works for us and the client, not for an insurance company. So he's going to find the best insurance company out there and the best policy.
Right.
So which of the policies do you think is the safest bet when, if I said, okay, I just want to make sure that no matter how long I live, this insurance policy pays my children. Which one is the steady Eddie safest bet?
Well, Mindy, I know you well. So, you know, it's easy for me to talk to you directly about your situation because I know you well. But most of the time what we ask our advisors to do is a client data sheet, a fact finder. Tell us a little bit about you. Tell us, you know, what the premium that you can put aside to something like that. Premium's important. If I build this elaborate plan and you can't afford it, chances are you're either going to not buy it, or if you buy it, you're going to let it lapse. Well, a lapsed insurance policy doesn't help your family.
Right.
So in this situation, to answer your question of which would be best, well, your children are young, so I would certainly use some term insurance. Now, 15 or 20 years, I would talk to you about that and see which one you prefer, either 15 or 20 years, and I'd let you look at both of them. But then I also want to think beyond that. What do we do when the boys are now outside of college? We still want to leave them some money. We want to make sure we have some permanent insurance. Now, permanent insurance takes on many assets or many facets. There are people that are very, very comfortable with a whole life insurance because they know it does exactly what it says it's going to do. And other people are saying, you know what, I'm okay with lowering the premium because if we use a universal or index universal, it may be 30 to 40% less premium. I'm okay with taking a little bit of risk and lowering the premium. So again, when I look at that, those are the things that I would sit down. And now you're the advisor. You know your clients very well. And most of the time, the advisors know the clients very, very well. And I would show these different things to you, and you could either lay them out in a menu to the client that they could choose, or you can actually suggest and choose for your client.
And with the ones that are based on the market, or are the variable ones, are they tied to the market? How are they, do you have any, like, can we anticipate that some of them are going to do really well depending on, and we're talking about decades, so it's an investment that you're investing in for possibly decades, hopefully, because we don't want you to die too young. And then, so in that accumulation, I look at it as an investment. You know, there's term insurance, which is just life insurance. It is what it is. But some of these policies are complex, and they're more of an investment in conjunction with life death benefit. They have so much value besides just when you die. You can actually have living benefits. It benefits your life while you're alive.
And cash value.
Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. So when you think about a variable universal life, it's going to look at the actual market itself, market performance itself, much as, you know, securities licensed brokers like yourself can look at different types of stocks or bonds. Variable universal life will allow you to do that. So there's certain people that want to take their life insurance, and I think about that life insurance as the base. It's the concrete of your financial plan. Once that concrete or once that base is in, then you can start moving into other investments such as stocks or bonds or things. But there are so many aspects that life insurance does that these other aspects don't. A lot of people come back and they want to use their life insurance for the other aspects. And when I say other aspects, let's talk about creditor proof. If you were sued, you think about all the different stocks or bonds or all the different types of investments you have. Most likely none of them are creditor proof unless they're in a trust. Life insurance is creditor proof. So when you look at that, you say, okay, now that's a very, very sound investment in
especially
the world
for
we live
businesses.
In. Sure, absolutely. The world we live in, at least I have some protections in place for that. Life insurance pays a tax-free death benefit. Now, tax-free death benefit is enormous.
Huge.
Yeah, when you think about the actual financial planning that you're doing with someone, you put money into, let's say for an example, a stock or a bond or whatever it may be, and were you to pass away, a lot of times there's a stepped-up cost, and your heirs are you either going to pay that stepped-up cost as a gain, a capital gain or something like that. Life insurance, there is no cost. It's tax-free.
And what about, like, long-term care benefits on life insurance? Now that's something that is more common, I think, than regular long-term care policies.
This is why maybe replacement policies could be, because these added living benefits didn't always exist, Mark, and in some of the more modern products are adding these living benefits, like Mindy's saying, including long-term care.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and Mindy Frank, I mean, quite frankly, we could do an entire segment of your show on living benefits and long-term care.
And we will.
but this is why replacement insurance, sometimes replacing in a policy, yeah. What this modern trend of adding living benefits that weren't in older policies, is that something
well, for
you've
anybody,
seen?
Yeah, anybody that has an insurance policy that's older than 5 years old, they should have you review it.
Yes.
And that's my opinion, because there's things, features inside the policies today. I'm not talking about more premium. Sometimes should have your premiums have actually gone down in the life insurance. So premiums might have gone down and you have more features, as you're both referring to, is living benefits. There's living benefits inside today's policies that make it worthwhile. So I would suggest any of your listeners out there that if they have a plan that's older than 5 years, certainly reach out and talk to you.
And what about somebody that already has the buy-sell agreement? They've already created this key man policy, buy-sell agreement, their partnership. And I feel like once people get things set up, they just, okay, check the box and move on with their life, with their business, because we're busy. You know, we're working, we're building our business, we're serving our clients and not ourselves. We're taking care of everybody else's families, but maybe not our own. Yes. And having that, how often do you really think that is good for a company to review those documents or even get another quote for whatever their insurance is doing?
Well, I would certainly say that a review for both a buy-sell and a key man should be done at least every 3 years. But more importantly, when you look at that, if the business is fairly new, the value of the business is growing increasingly. It's jumping, you know, quadruply in some years because you're growing and growing. As a business gets, you know, grows and bigger, it's not growing in, it may not grow 50% or 60% in a year. So it slows down on the actual growth, but the numbers are that much bigger. You know, if you take a business and the business is worth $20 million and in 1 year it does 10%, well, the business is now worth $22 million. Yeah. That's $2 million is added to that business. That's a giant number that if you're not protecting it. So 3 years at least.
So what about the person that has had the same policy for many years, but it's accumulated a lot of cash value, and they don't want to lose that cash value that they have in that policy?
Good point. We don't want them to lose the policy. I mean, there's so much value in life insurance in these, you know, older policies. What I would highly suggest that they do is come into your office, or at least reach out and talk to you. Come in, sit down, let us. I'll do that for you. It's what we do at my office. My staff will sit down and review those policies, because not every one of them is bad. And they're certainly not. They're not bad. They're great policies. The question is there something better out there today or not?
Yeah.
And it's worth looking at.
Absolutely. I compare them to vehicles. It's like a car that you purchased in the 80s is not going to be as fuel efficient as a car that you can purchase
safe.
Today.
Absolutely.
Or safe, or like Tesla, for example. A man that's trained to work on a car from the 80s may not be able to fix a Tesla from today. So things evolve, things change, and life insurance is no different. It's not something that you just set and forget. You really do want to review it. This is the Mindy Molina Show. I thank you so much for being on the show with us today, Mark. You bring so much value, not only to my practice, my firm, my clients, but to all the listeners. I can't wait to have you back on again to talk more about all the different life insurance strategies. And I am just so thankful to be a part of everyone that's listening, your lives. I hope we're bringing a lot of value to you. If you need anything from us, you know, you can always reach us online, MindyMolina.com. Just Google Mindy with an IE. And like I always say, God loves you, and there is nothing anyone can do about it. Thanks for listening. Join us next week. And remember, if you have any concerns about your financial picture, please reach out to us at 561-729-2778. There's a no obligation consultation. All you have to do is text or call 561-729-2778. Or you can reach us on our website at www.mindymolina.com. Mindy Molina Investments and Insurance has been protecting the retirement of families for 15 years. Information provided by Mindy Molina Investments and Insurance and or its affiliates are for informational purposes only and is not intended to be relied upon as a forecast, research, or investment advice, and is not a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any securities or to adopt any investment strategy. Get your financial report at 561-729-2778. Or you can reach us at www.mindymolina.com.
Have you read the book of Zephaniah recently? What about Ecclesiastes or Titus? Well, if these books are a little unfamiliar to you, maybe it's because you've never read or studied